Welcome back. Welcome back, where we continue looking at our first aid kit. When my children were young, they all had their own first aid kit. And we got a little, you call it lunchbox, with a clip lid, and they had their name on it. So they all had their first aid kit. So what else should be in the first aid kit, students? What if someone has a bee sting or a spider bite?
Charcoal.
Charcoal. And you can buy little containers that they come in. And I know in Australia you buy, you know, culinary herbs, basil, dried, and they come in these lovely little bottles, you know, and they're a nice size to, when you've finished the herb, to put it in. So what else do you think in the first aid kit? I think another nice additive is slippery elm. And the reason slippery elm is going in the first aid kit is it can be used if someone's got a bad case of diarrhea. Charcoal's also good for that. You can even mix them together. If someone's got a bad case of diarrhea, it is also an indication that the inside of their gut is quite inflamed from the diarrhea. And so the charcoal will absorb and neutralise any poisons, and the slippery elm will coat and soothe. Plus, on the outside, it's a deep drawer, so it could be used with the charcoal in a poultice or by itself.
Also for the snake bite.
Snake bite? That's true. Snake bite, wasp bite, so any poison bite that can be used, and again internally for bad diarrhea can be good.
Does it deteriorate in quality?
No. I guess after 20 years it might, but it's the powdered bark of the slippery elm tree. When you see it, it's like a fluffy powder. So there are three very important points to it. I think it's also good to have a little eucalyptus or tea tree oil. And that can be in a tiny little bottle. That's not right, is it? That's not right. I thought, where's the A? U. Ca. Lip. Tus. Yes. Eucalyptus oil or tea tree. That should be an or. Or lavender. Now what you can use all of these for, these can help as disinfectants. And ideally, of course, most people have water. You'll need water to mix with the charcoal and slippery elm, but I think most people, no matter where they are, they have water.
Disinfectants to apply it on the outside?
On the outside, yeah. Yeah, if you've got a wound that's been cut on a rusty nail or something like that. I wouldn't put the oil straight on an open wound. You could put it in a little water to wash it out.
Rather these than hydrogen peroxide?
You could have some hydrogen peroxide, but this is your first aid kit that you're travelling with, and we can certainly put that in.
What do you mean by that? Should it be kept in the fridge, hydrogen peroxide?
No.
Why can it be in the first aid kit?
It certainly can. Hydrogen peroxide. Because you don't want to make it too big. You want a little one. So what's also important is a little pair of scissors. Now, I talked about the possibility with Elizabeth's scrape yesterday. There was a bit of skin there of cutting that. So what I did was I got a pair of tweezers, and I always travel with a little pair of scissors, not in my carry-on, of course, but in my baggage. And what I did was I got eucalyptus oil and I rubbed it on the tips of the scissors, on the tips of the tweezers, because I was planning to pick it up and cut, but it had stuck, so I just left it. So there might be a time for that. So scissors, also cloths. So what I think is a good idea, you have about, you might have about four this size. And of course, folding over, they're going to make a poultice about that size. I also usually have a few this size, and that will make a little one maybe for a spider bite or a bee sting. So you might have cloths, you know, four of them. And four of those. And they're best out of the retreat I was with at recently in Manchester. I said, have you got any old sheets? And they did. It had a big tear in it. They're perfect. The older the sheet, the better, because the cloth is soft, the cloth is thin, and you just want to hold it together. And also the beauty of that is there's no chemicals in that. So a lot of people, when they make poultices, they use these disposable wipe things that you might wipe the table with. We call it chucks. I don't know if you have them here. They're called chucks in Australia. But people will get them on a roll, and they're made out of a polyestery fibre thing, and they wipe the table with it. Anyway, they've got lots of little holes in them, and a lot of people use them for poultices, but I do not like to, because I like natural fibre next to the skin, especially when you've got a wound. You don't want any chemicals going there. But recently, about a year ago, I discovered some chucks made out of viscose. So we've got a whole stock of them now, you know, and they're green. And they've got all these little holes. So it's great, because when you make a poultice, what's in the poultice, that's what you want to come out into the skin.
Into the cloth, you mean?
Yeah, you want it to come out of the cloth, the juice come through to the skin. So you also want, there's a cloth, bandage. And ideally you get a stretch bandage. And you probably want at least two. And you want some pins. I always think it's nice to have about four or five safety pins. And safety pins are good, because if there's a wound on the leg, now you're also thinking about if you're out camping. Obviously, if you're in the house, you've got a lot of stuff there. But if you're out camping and you want to hold the skirt up, or you want to hold the pants up, it's good to have the pins there. And, you know, sometimes bandages come with their own little clips. So we call them safety pins.
Yeah,
we do. Yeah. So safety pins, that's what I mean. And I also think it's a good idea to have tweezers. So tweezers to get a splinter out. And I also think it's good to have a needle. So if you've got a nasty splinter in there, sometimes the needle will help. And you can get little tiny containers where you put your needles and your pins, things like that in. Oh, my children love their first aid kits. They loved getting them just right, and they loved going to the shop and getting all the things ready for it. A friend of mine told me that they were camping. There were about three families camping, and someone had an accident. And the next thing, the little four-year-old girl's running up with her first aid kit, four, opened her first aid kit. Tape In Australia, you can get hypoallergenic tape. And this this tape, where's my O? Oh, start again, the whole thing's a bit wrong there. Hypoallergenic tape. And we find that that sits well with any skin. I remember my little grandson, Sonny. He's my son's little boy. My son and his wife have separated and they're divorced now. So sometimes he's with his mum and sometimes he's with his dad. There are a few boys. And I heard that he had a boil on the inside of his leg. And I remember when he got out of the car, he was about seven, I said, "Hey, Sonny, how are you going?" He said, "Not too good, Grandma, not too good." I said, "What is it?" He said, "Oh, my leg." And when he had shorts on, when I lifted it up, the poor little bloke, his mum had tried to do a poultice, but she just put it straight on. She put a sheet of plastic over it and then Band-Aids, four Band-Aids. Now, Sonny was the little baby that was very sensitive to allergies and he's got very light skin. And, oh, I had trouble trying to get the Band-Aids off. It nearly ripped the skin. And the whole leg was inflamed. The boil a bit inflamed, but the Band-Aids, they'd caused even more inflammation. So the poor little bloke, when he got out, he's going, "Not too good, Grandma, I'm not too good." So be very. Sometimes you can cause more problems just by the way you bandage it. And that's why with Elizabeth, the skin around where she'd scraped was quite delicate and I did not want to tape it. I did not want to tape that at all. So we just, you know, when you put the cream onto the cloth, and of course the cloth we used was I still have a little bit of the old sheet from the retreat there, and it's soft and we just flooded it with the cream. And it just stuck on the leg. But because she was going to sleep, I didn't want to tape it, we just bandaged it with a stretch bandage and not tight. So look for your hypoallergenic, and that's when I thought, well, I'm going to find some safe tape. And so when I found it, we could get it on a roll, I gave him a whole box. I said to Sonny, "You always keep that with you." So if ever your mum needs to do something, tell her to use that one. And it is... When we apply, you've probably heard the black salve, the Cancema cancer cream. So we sometimes apply that. It's got bloodroot in it and it'll eat out a cancer cell. We always cover it with the hypoallergenic tape because on the face, it's you can take that off. There's not even a mark on it, and even for the most sensitive skin. So be mindful that you need to tape it. Use a tape that is less allergic, and I'm sure you can find. I don't know what they would, and you probably know, the nurses probably know the different types of tapes. So, what did we do for poor Sonny? Well, what I knew I put some comfrey cream on his, where the tapes had been. I just had to leave it, just not irritated anymore. And that night when he went to bed, we put a slippery almond charcoal compress on his boil, and then we got a bandage, and we bandaged that on. And the next day, the top of the boil was open, and it wasn't hard. A little bit of a push, and everything came out. He was very, very happy. See, with a boil, the pain they get from a boil is the pressure, you know, from the inflammation. Inflammation is what usually causes the pain. I think it's always good to have a plastic bag. And the plastic bag will be for your waist. So if you're going to be, and this again, let's pretend we're out. We're out camping, you want a plastic. Ugh, what's happening to the spelling today? It's atrocious. Start again. My brain flicks through to the next bit. Plastic bag for waste. And I think it's also good to have some tissues and get some nice soft tissues. And you can also buy little travel kits of tissues that have got about 10, 12 tissues in them. So looking at your little first aid kit that's compact. Obviously, your first aid kit in your house might be a little bigger. So in Misty Mountain Health Retreat, we have a poultice box, and that's quite big. We've got different cloths in there. We've got castor oil packs ready to go, so we've got quite a few. So for your home first aid kit, the other thing you would have too is castor oil. Cling wrap's another good one to have. I've put all these under the under number 6 because they're more your mechanicals. Do you know cling wrap? You know when you've got something in a bowl and you want to put that plastic wrap over it to put in the fridge? Uh-huh. Yeah.
Do you use it for
poultices? Yeah, I try not to have that very much on the skin. So if I make a poultice that big, the plastic will be about that much around it. Some people put a poultice on and then they'll wrap the whole thing with cling wrap. I don't like having so much plastic on the skin. And I think I showed you when we had our poultice demo that I folded over a couple of times like that to make it more workable. So our first aid kit.
What's the difference between a poultice and a compress?
A compress, a poultice is vegetable matter that's drawing things out of you. Whereas a compress, the castor oil compress, it's a compress meaning it basically penetrates in and has an effect that way. It's not drawing out. So that would be two compresses, really, just two. That's your castor oil and that's your cane pepper. Neither of those are drawing anything out of you.
And when you said that you had castor oil packs ready to go, what do you mean?
Well, with the castor oil pack, you want a few layers because the thicker the pack, the more castor oil will go in. I've exaggerated that so that you can see that. And then you have your plastic here. And what we usually do is, let's look at it from the top down. There's your pack of a few layers. There's the plastic. Sometimes we'll get a needle and thread and put a few stitches there to just hold it together because it's going to be used again and again and again. Or, well, that's what I would do, but one of the staff, because I'm a sewer, they just stapled it. And, of course, the staff much prefers stapling.
Do you wash them and use them again?
No, you don't wash them.
Oh.
Every time you use it, you might put a little bit more castor oil. Sometimes you can, you know, when I was doing it on my leg, I think I told you the story of the injury that I'd had a while ago and the scar tissue that built up. I just used the same poultice for about a month. Now, if it was up in areas where you're perspiring, you know, and the poultice might get soiled, of course you'd discard it. But this is my ankle. You don't get much perspiration down there. Whereas the cane pepper compress, that's really discarded once it's used.
Okay.
Yes.
We had the cream that you used yesterday for Elizabeth. Something similar, perhaps, in the first
aid kit? You certainly could. You certainly could. So we make our own comfrey, our comfrey cream. And remember, comfrey's got the growth stimulant in it. And that's the two oils in that is a combination of olive oil and beeswax, a little bit of beeswax so that it's spreadable. You certainly could have. And that's where I think I showed you, we just smeared it over the cloth.
You put the cream directly on the sore?
Yeah.
Is it the comfrey or the calendula that then is healing and the cream is just a carrier? Or?
Yeah, the oils are just a carrier, but in Isabel's... So can you tell us what was in yours, cream?
It's the flower.
Yeah, it's mostly just calendula.
Yeah, it's just calendula. I put calendula in oil for... 3 months or four, and then the oil extracts
So we'll say calendula, calendula, or comfrey cream. Yeah.
Did you dry the calendula?
Yes, first. Yeah.
Yeah. So same with the comfrey. We dry it first. Otherwise, the moisture in it can go moldy. Mm.
Yes, it's good to have vitamin E like you have it in it, or to go bad. The vitamin E.
Yeah, sorry, yeah. I don't know, I have a little bit of vitamin E.
You had vitamin E in yours. I never put anything in there because there's nothing that would go off because that's totally dry. Mm. Yep, so you could put a little E in if you wanted. So we've got our first aid kit. Obviously, if you're traveling, it might be tiny, but at home you might have a slightly bigger one.
But when a wound is inflamed, is it good to take in calendula cream on top of the infected wound?
If a wound is inflamed, you have to get that inflammation down. And that's where the hot and colds and the hydrogen peroxide to clean it out.
But so you don't put the calendula straight.
No, you'd have to deal with that first. You'd have to deal with and that's where you'd want more something to draw it out, where you might use the charcoal and slippery elm.
Yes?
What did you say before about something that's eating up the cancer cell? I'm thinking about elder people, they get sometimes something growing in their face.
It's black salve. It's called black salve, or another name is cancema. And it contains bloodroot. And it's the bloodroot that eats out the cancer cell. So if you Google cancema or black salve, you'll read all about it. And it even gives you how you can make it. It's very controversial. But we've had incredible success for it. I've applied it hundreds of times. Isn't it dangerous? No. The only time it would be dangerous if someone kept applying it. So we apply it once. We cover it with a hypoallergenic tape and we just leave it for 24 hours. Now, if there are cancer cells there, the person will often feel a tickle or a tingling or a little sting, meaning it's starting to work. It'll only react on a cancer cell. After 24 hours, we take it off, and it's usually all red and raised and it's got a pussy centre. One man got very scared and thought it was all infected. I said, no, it's the bloodroot working. And what's the pus? It's just dead white blood cells, all doing their job. And what do we do to it now? Nothing. Nothing. You just let it do its work. And usually over the next 24 hours, it looks much worse, more inflamed. And then over the next 24 hours, the swelling starts to settle right down. It gets a scab. And usually after 10 days, that the core, which has gone like a scab, it falls out. And now you're left with a crater. And a lot of people get all upset and worried about them. But you find that that'll fill up. And
which
there it is.
Cancers, you put them on.
Usually skin cancers. Skin. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Melanoma or basalium?
Pardon?
Doesn't matter which one, the good one or the bad one. You can put a melanoma?
Yeah, yeah.
And then basalium on both.
Yes. All skin cancers. We had a man do our program, he would have been late 70s, and he had a basal cell carcinoma on his edge of his eyebrow, and he said the doctor wanted to cut that out, but he said he didn't want to do that, and he'd heard that we do the cancema. So we applied it and we covered it, and he certainly got tingles and little stings. And when we took it off the next day, it was quite incredible because we'd applied it to an area like that. And then another spot came up there, another spot there, and another spot. What the cancema will do, it'll go underneath and it'll find any other spots. It's incredible. And the next day, whoa, it was all swollen. And the guest was saying, Barbara, look. And I say, fantastic. Fantastic, it's doing its work. Because I knew over the next 24 hours, that'll settle right down. And then he took a photo every day. It's just incredible. By the end of the week, it had fallen out and he just had a little tiny white scar there. He was so happy. That's all it was, yeah?
Like I told you, I used it and it was fine, but I got a lot of reactions from people because I think people have heard of other people using it for breast cancer.
That
would be dangerous too? Or?
I don't think it's ever dangerous. But we had a lady who had breast cancer on the side, and her husband painted an area that big. I would never do that. Never do that, because then huge reaction and the person can hardly cope with that. So painful. You know the old saying, treatment was successful but the patient died. We got rid of the cancer but oops, the person's not breathing anymore. You know, you've got to only just pie a little bit so the person can live and cope. And when she came to us, the whole area was red, just red raw. That poor lady had been through a terrible time. So I always say to people, you're better to apply a little less. Let it all settle down, and maybe 2 months later, if you think there's still a bit there, do it again. If there's no cancer, there will be no reaction. So people come to us at a health retreat, they've got a spot here, they've got a spot there, they've got a spot there. Oh, we dab all the spots. And the next day it's very exciting, everyone takes them off. Nothing there, nothing there. Oh, that's a good one. But you just don't apply too much. Then it's just too hard to cope with because it's too painful.
Yeah? It is only on the cancer spot for 24 hours and you
that's
won't
right.
put a new one on.
No.
Okay, then it is working.
That's the problem. When people put too much on, they get too much of a reaction. So you only apply it once. If you think there's more there, try again a few months later when everything has settled down. So we had a guy come and he had a skin cancer just under his eyelash. And he said, can you put some on this? And I said, oh, it's very close to the eye. And he said, well, if you don't do it, what am I going to do? I said, all right. All right. I said, your eye's going to swell right up. He said, well, what are they going to do in surgery? Take half of my lower, none. So I did. And I took a lot of time and did it with great care. I think I had a toothpick where I carefully applied it and then put the tape just under there. The next day when he came in, yeah, eyes nearly closed, eyes all swollen up, he's so happy. And I said, good reaction, mate. That really shows it was cancer. We carefully took, and, you know, this tape is so beautiful because, you know, if you don't use the right tape, you can get inflammation just from the tape. Well, he actually went home this couple of days. We prefer to do it on the first day. Otherwise, you go home and people say, oh, they've just been to a health retreat and look at them. But he was very happy because he got a lovely reaction. It settled right down. The core fell out. So, you know, and if you Google that, you'll get photos of people with huge reactions saying, look how dangerous this cream is. You know, this is just like taking a photo of someone who's just had a nose job. You know, they might have an adjustment. What's their face look like the next day? Black. They got black eyes, swollen. So do they put photos of that up and say, oh, don't have a nose job? Look what happens to you. And if you have it burnt off from a doctor, what's it look like as soon as you've had it burnt off? Over the next 24 hours, all inflamed. So if you do it and it does get inflamed and relatives say, oh, what have you done? You know what you say? Oh, just burning off a skin cancer. And no one blinks at that because, of course, there's going to be a bit of a reaction. Yeah?
So you use these for the melanomas, but what if it's not malign? Is it still not harmful in that
no,
case?
No, it's not. No. All it does is eat out cancer cells. That's what you've got to think. No cancer cell, no reaction. So it's quite incredible. In America, they took it to the American Medical Association, AMA, took it to court to try and get it banned. The judge just threw it out of court. He said, don't be ridiculous. You know.
Yeah? When it fell out, is there a wound?
It's a hole.
Yeah, it's a hole, yeah.
It's a hole. But guess what? The hole fills up. And one man, they were going to take half his ear off, so he did the cancema. Now he's got a little dip in his ear. You know, and people say, yeah, but there's a little dip in his ear. Well, at least he's got his ear. So it's just all what you compare it to.
But you fill up the hole with calendula cream or what do you do? Something?
Well, you could. But if you do nothing, it will fill up. Yeah. Well, it's not a raw wound.
Oh, okay.
It seems that as the core shrinks up, it's like a scab on top and it's almost a bit scab underneath and then it falls out. There might be a slight soft hole there, but it fills up very quickly. Because I did one on my hand. I think I don't even know where it was now. It just leaves usually a little white scar, and it came up almost like a volcano. The reason I did it, because if you get something that's a little scaly, that's fairly typical, and I certainly got a reaction, and the core fell out, and I was left with a crater. Oh, there's certainly no crater now. I didn't do anything to it. Because sometimes I like doing nothing just to see what it'll do. Yes?
Do you know what content it is in this?
Yeah, it's the bloodroot that's the active ingredient. Okay. And you can get the recipe on YouTube to make it, yeah?
Does it work with a wart too?
Sometimes it will.
Because they are overly wart waxed. They are so big, but they cut it out and they send it in and they say, oh, it's not cancer. It's just an old wart for elderly people. They get so in growth. It doesn't look good.
No, it doesn't look good.
So can
no.
you
know, you could try it, but... You know, sometimes it'll react and sometimes it won't. Same with a mole. Sometimes it'll react with a mole and sometimes it won't. But wart. What can you do for warts? Well, my son told me recently his son had a wart and he just put apple cider vinegar on it. And he did it 3 times and the wart was gone. Apple cider vinegar. Some people have told me banana skins. I've never done it. I haven't had a wart, but banana skins. One lady said she wrapped banana skins on her son's warts every night and in a week they were gone. You could also try castor oil.
And on the skin, in or outside?
On the outside.
Like the inside of the skin or the outside of the banana skin?
Oh, the inside of the banana skin, the soft part.
Somebody said dishing detergent.
Dishwashing detergent. Most dishwashing detergent's a bit toxic, so...
Yes,
water
is ACV sample.
Apple cider vinegar.
About apple cider vinegar, I have a question. If you cook something with it, because it's there is alcohol in it or something similar, does that evaporate when you cook?
No.
No.
So we don't use apple cider vinegar at all internally, but we use it externally. In Australia, in the cleaning department of supermarkets, you can buy 2 litre bottles of white vinegar that people use for cleaning. Any questions?
Yes.
What can you do about Borrelia? Borrelia.
Lyme's disease.
There's an excellent book, and I give this book to everyone that asks me about Lyme's disease. My granddaughter had Lyme's disease. She lives in America. And you can, I don't know if anyone's ever investigated where Lyme's disease came from, but there's quite a few books written, and that there are experiments done on Plum Island. So just put Plum Island in and you'll find that one of the Nazi scientists apparently was playing and put the Lyme's disease into the ticks. Mm. Anyway, I've got too much other stuff to study than go into the great detail on where it came from, but we get ticks in Australia and no one gets Lyme's disease. So the book is called Healing Lymes. And it's by Stephen Harrod Brunner. So this is how my daughter healed her daughter's Lymes. And he's got an excellent program using a bit of hydrotherapy, some essential oils, dietary on how you can heal Lyme's. Yes?
I don't know if you already talked about it, but what do you do when the person has COVID?
Well, realizing that COVID is just a flu. So I had COVID 6 months ago. We had a double-vaxxed guest who within 24 hours had a really bad headache. And so he came Sunday. Monday he was complaining of a headache. It's not unusual because a lot of people coming off coffee. But when Howard knocked on his door to wake him up on Tuesday morning, he said, sorry to say this, Howard, but I've got a testing kit and I've got COVID. But on Monday, he had contact with everyone. Michael went down, and then a few days later, I went down, half our staff went down, and half our guests went down. So I had a terrible headache on the first day, and then I had a high fever. I don't think I've had a fever for about 20 years. And then I had a fever for the next 2 days. So people say, what did you do? I love doing nothing. Because we live in a body that can heal itself. So I drank a lot of water, I slept a lot, and I hardly ate a thing. Because the body can heal itself. Now, so day four, my fever was gone. Day four, I felt a lot better, but I was very tired. And you've probably heard that this strain of flu, which is what I call it, people get very tired. So on the fourth day, if I lay down for half an hour, I could do 10 minutes work. And then day five, if I lay down for 10 minutes, I could do half hour work. So just little by little, my energy returned. So I think it's important to ensure people that this really is just a strain of the flu. And there's different variants. And the last one they talked about was the Omicron, which they said was highly contagious. So that's obviously was this one. But it was exactly the same with anyone who had it, you know. The guests were happy they got it at the retreat because best place to have it, they were doing steam every night. And what was interesting, some got it and some didn't. The ones that got it, their bodies were ready for a house clean. The ones that didn't, they obviously didn't need a house clean. My body obviously needed a house clean. I don't think I'd had a cold for about 3 years. Does that mean my immune system was down? No, it means my immune system was working very well. Remember what disease is. COVID is an effort of nature to free the system from conditions that arise because of a violation of the laws of health. Remember early in the week, I said, don't go up to the person and say, what law have you broken? I break the laws of health when I fly because I'm not breathing in good air, you know. It's just we live on it. And I haven't always lived like this. I have lived like this for the last 45 years. But before that, I did a lot of alcohol and I did drugs. So do you know what I mean? That we haven't always lived like this and there can be remnants still for the body to do a bit of detoxing with.
And if there are side effects, let's say that the person maybe has not so strong immune system and...
Do you know, the immune system is a very interesting thing. So, you know, we always say they're sick, they must not have a strong immune system. Well, we have. And the only thing that would knock back our immune system is sugar. Sugar. In fact, in his book, Proof Positive, Dr. Neil Nedley, he shows how many white blood cells are killed off with every teaspoon of sugar. Drugs can knock back your immune system. Chemotherapy really slaughters the immune system. So I don't do any of those things. And the fact that I got a cold can actually mean my immune system is working very well to the point that it says, great, now we can do a good cleanse. Yes?
Yeah, it's interesting how we talk about these things because I then want to ask, I think it's important to understand this because on the other hand, sometimes we talk about how if we've been, yeah, if the lifestyle is not quite right, then we have a ripe area in the body for viruses to harbor.
Yeah.
Is that not the same as saying that the immune system is low or...
No, it's you see, where the immune system is going, it'll go and attack where that virus is happening, so the immune system is good. And when you get a fever, wow, your immune system goes way up, very, very high. That's why fevers are so good. I was looking at the live blood cell because usually with a white blood, when you look on the live blood analysis, you've got about 3 or 4 white blood cells per screen. You have one drop of blood, so you move around, you've got many screens. Well, this little girl, she had 15 white blood cells per screen. That's, wow, it's high. And then when I talked to her parents, she had a bit of a fever and she had a bit of diarrhea. So I think it's funny how they say, oh, her immune system must be low. Well, it's high. When you get sick, your immune system goes, woof, it goes into... you know, crisis response and out come all the white blood cells. That's your immune system.
But don't we say that the immune system should be, or its role is also to cut it back right at the entry into the body so that it doesn't, so that the virus would not find a place in the body? That the immune system can protect from beginning?
Yes. But remember, the virus comes in and it'll only live where there's something to eat. They're opportunist organisms. So there's also that. So I guess they're theories.
So then, yeah, you're referring to then that we build up toxins in our bodies without being in control of that, and then the body is cleaning it up with
yes,
the immune system.
Yeah. And if you get to a high fever, is there a possibility that the fever goes too high? So you have to press down the fever?
The only reason it would go too high usually is in a state of dehydration. And there can certainly be a case of going too high, but then what we find as hydrotherapists, water therapists, is that often when the fever's going too high, it can't get out. And so that's when you do the wet sheet packs, you do the sponging of the skin, different things that help to draw it out, or even just lying in a tepid bath, tepid meaning warm, not hot, not cold, and that helps to draw the fever out. But I have found that the only time that a child will convulse is if they're dehydrated. That's why when my babies had a fever, I just let them breastfeed as much as they wanted because they were getting lots more milk. So hydration's important. I mean, another way to get a fever down, not everyone's as happy with this treatment, is an enema. So especially if someone's vomiting and they can't keep water down and we've got to get water in to help with that fever. An enema, you can get 2 cups of water into the body like that. In fact, it's quicker than a drip. quicker to get water in via the colon than even put a drip in the arm.
Cold shower, is it effective? I tried. It functioned.
Yeah, but what you want is you want to draw the heat out. And when someone's very feverish, a cold shower can be incredibly uncomfortable, whereas the tepid shower, they can cope a lot better with that.
But what is the limit? 40 degrees?
Oh, I never take the temperature. I always just feel them. Ooh, they're a bit hot. And what I find, if my children had a fever and they're sleeping, I just let them go. But if they started to thrash around and get uncomfortable, that was one sign that it's probably getting a bit hot. So that then you'd put them in the bath or whatever you would do. So remember the 3 things for a fever? I think it's very important to remember this. 1, fever is your friend. It has a purpose. God put it there. That high heat gets a massive production of white blood cells, your immune system going into activity. It's your friend. Water puts the fire out. So that's water internally and water externally. And often I would just do a water treatment just to get the temperature down so that they're comfortable. And when all the rubbish is burnt up, the fire goes out. Because that's what the fever's doing. Rubbish burnt up, fire out. I'll give you a story to illustrate. There's this young man in Romania. He and his wife have had a baby, and he's very, very diligent with his parenting. I get an email every couple of weeks, Barbara, she's got a spot on her hand. What does this mean? Anyway, unfortunately, they had to have the baby vaccinated because he is only partly a Romanian citizen and they could not stay. Anyway, it was very complicated. And the baby got high fevers. And the nurse told him to give this baby a drug. I'm not sure what they have in Sweden. We're told to give the baby aspirin or Panadol. And it's a mild painkiller type drug that will get the fever down. And when I was a nurse, that's when anyone had a fever, quickly give them Panadol, get that fever down. You see, as nurses, we're taught fever's almost the enemy. But you know, you've got to ask, why is the body making a fever? Why? Anyway, this father was so distressed, especially seeing as he's so diligent, and they would get the fever down, and then about 4 hours later, the fever would come up again. And then they'd give the drug again, and the fever would come down. So he wrote to me and he said, I am so stressed, I'm just not sleeping. And I said to him, I never, ever gave that to my baby. So he said, what did you do? And I said, I would just sponge them. I said, get a bath that's not hot, that's not cold, and just lay the little one in there. And you know, when you're dealing with little ones, you must smile the whole time, even if you're terribly worried, because that will calm them. When they see your frown, they get scared too. So you must always smile, even if you're crying, smile. And just get it down. And the baby's breastfed. I said, just keep that baby breastfeeding. Just keep the baby. And they want to feed because they're distressed and the suckling comforts them. So they do usually feed quite a bit. Anyway, he wrote back the next day and said, wow, the fever came down and stayed down. See, if you keep giving a drug to put the fever down, but it hasn't finished its work, guess what? Just going to keep coming back. Just going to keep coming back.
Yes?
If you get a cold and don't eat, only drink, and then your stomach, you get stomach ache, is that dehydration? It could be hydration.
It could be. I remember on the first day of my fever, I did not, no interest in breakfast, no interest in lunch, and then about 4 o'clock in the afternoon, I had a very strong hunger pang, so I had 2 bananas. So that's all I had the first day. So if the stomach's sore and you don't want to eat, you could take slippery arm. So you look at your response. I had 2 bananas and my body said, thank you very much, and that's all that it needed. Or if I was near the health centre and they had a carrot, sorry, and apple juice, I might have that. But that's a 10-minute drive from me. Yeah?
Well, we have to go back because lives, I think, is that we call Borrelia, isn't it?
Yep.
Yes. Yeah. And what about TBE, tick-borne encephalitis?
What?
TBE. Tick-borne encephalitis.
that is
I'm sorry, I'm not familiar with that. I know encephalitis. Mm-hmm.
It's from the virus.
From the tick.
From the virus, tick-borne
encephalitis.
Yeah, that's very difficult.
And it's very popular to give vaccination against it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Several times per year.
Well, I definitely wouldn't be vaccinated against it because there's no proof that vaccines do anything. Yeah. And yet the media will not tell us that. But I suppose if a person gets a tick, you just put the charcoal on it straight away. You'd have to try and prevent it. Mm-hmm. Because the charcoal will pull the poison out. A lady emailed me yesterday and she had this great big long name of what her 7-year-old child has. And you'll find this, people say, have you ever treated this? So you Google it. And you know what it was? It was just inflamed lymph nodes in the stomach. She said, so I say, what are your child's symptoms? That's what I always ask, what are your symptoms? Because you don't have to know every disease and you can easily Google it. And What is a disease? It's just a name given to a group of symptoms. And I said to her, stop the 5 allergens that, this stomach's obviously inflamed because it's getting food that the body can't handle. But I just wanted to give that illustration of there's lots of names out there. And you can find out what the name means and then treat that symptom.
But could you treat encephalitis?
Well, that's a difficult one because that's inflammation in the brain. Mm-hmm. And it's from a tick bite, yeah? Mm-hmm. So it's obviously from a poison in there. Mm-hmm. You could take charcoal, maybe if the poison's still around, put the charcoal on the tick bite, take charcoal by mouth. And when you put your feet in hot water, that relieves pressure in the brain, definitely. Do you know, my daughter Emma, she she doesn't go to the doctor, she doesn't do drugs, but she had the most terrible earache last week and she was doing all the things we know, but it was getting worse. So she went to the doctor, got antibiotics. She thought maybe this is the time I need them. But the pain didn't relieve. So she went to another doctor and they found this great big plug of wax in there. So it wasn't an infection at all. So they're putting hydrogen peroxide in to relieve it. And hot coconut oil in the ears, nice. Obviously not hot enough to burn you, but the hydrogen peroxide can bubble that out. Yeah.
What about psoriasis, as like flakes in the...
Psoriasis. Psoriasis is an allergy. So with psoriasis, eczema, you stop the five allergens, which is your peanuts, your wheat, dairy, oats, refined sugar. And that can take at least 2 months to get a result. I got an email yesterday, hay fever. This lady said, my poor daughter, you know, she suffers so much with hay fever and she's taking the drugs for it several times a day. In other words, the drugs don't stop it. They might slightly relieve it. But you see that many people aren't interested in the remedy. Stopping the five allergens and taking 2 months to see a response. Yeah.
Can it also be that the symptoms change? Because my wife has always had hay fever, even when she was a child. And when she was born, or very little, she got like, I don't know how you call this.
But eczema?
You have like red all over. And then she always had like the symptoms, sneezing and coughing. And, you know, and then 7 years ago, she got this eczema in her hand. So is it just the same sickness in a way?
It is. It just manifests itself in different parts of the body. It's like my sister Yvonne. She was born covered in eczema. And, of course, was given cow's milk. Mum didn't know. No one knew. And then within 18 months, the eczema went and then severe asthma. So often the eczema will go into asthma, but it's an allergy to the same thing.
Yeah? You said also that it can be toxins, right?
Well, it can be. I know people that have developed, a lot of babies develop eczema after the vaccination. So the vaccination can start it. Also exposure to mold. One lady said that she never realised that under her baby's cot, the carpet, underneath the carpet, was black mould. And, that was one of the causes of the eczema. So eczema and asthma and hay fever are all allergies. And it could be an allergy to chemicals, it could be an allergy to mould and foods. And then you've got your five known allergens. So to get a response, you stop all allergens. And some people will say, but I've always eaten wheat and I didn't have an allergy then. That's right. But when you are sick, you've got to do different things. And it's quite possible that once you've conquered all of these things, further down the track, might take 6 months, might take a year, might take 2 years, you'll probably be able to have a bit of that food again. But in sickness, you change things to get a result. Yeah.
That's also really interesting because, like, when my wife was young, she ate dairy and cheese and all this, and she only had the sneezing.
Yeah.
But when we became plant-based, she got, like, sneezing and eczema.
Yeah.
So that's kind of, why is that?
Well, it builds up in the body, too. The more, you take these foods, the bigger it's getting, and then there's a change, and often the body goes, finally, we can actually start detoxing a little bit, and your skin is your last way out. Yes?
Just a comment to that. It can be also grains if she is still eating the modern type of wheat, for example.
Yes, spelt.
So it's spelt also?
Well, son-in-law, he found he never totally conquered his till he stopped all grain. He eats grain now, but to conquer it, he stopped it. So we had a lot of vegetables. He had a lot of legumes. nuts and seeds and minor fruit.
And not even millets?
Nope.
Okay, millet is also grain.
Well, it all depends how quickly you want to recover from this thing. Yeah.
Somebody who wants to go away from her drugs that she take for, say, anxiety or for pain, what would you advise her to do?
So much depends on where the pain is and the source of the pain, but pain-killing medication is highly addictive, and after a while it doesn't do what it initially did, and hydrotherapy is one of the best pain relievers. If there's inflammation, because pain is often due to inflammation, then you would maybe do the hot and colds, maybe a poultice. If the pain is due to maybe a problem in the spine, then you would go and visit an osteopath who could have a look at why the pain is there. So you'd investigate. Remember what you do, you look for the cause, because there's always a cause. Things don't just happen for no reason. So you look at the history and you look at the symptoms, where they are, how long they've been there. So I always dig. How long have you had this pain? Did anything happen to that area? No. Or when did it first start? Did anything happen around that time? You question, and then you look for a response. Yes, I realise this word's wrong. I'll fix it in a minute. Symptoms.
But what about anxiety?
I'd have a look at when did the anxiety first happen. Sometimes anxiety can be a hormonal imbalance, because progesterone is your calming hormone, and if it's down and estrogen's high, it can be prone to that. The person can be prone to it. And then you would have a look at where it first started, and it could be that there was a traumatic thing happened. And then sometimes the person may need to have a look at what happened and say, well, do I need to forgive the person that was responsible for that happening? And then little by little they can train themselves out of it. And one of the best ways is deep breathing, just breathing very, very deeply. And there are some herbs that calm, and that's chamomile, passion flower, skullcap, St. John's wort, a nerve nourisher. And they can train themselves out of the panic attacks.
Would you lower the medication little by little?
You can once they've implemented all of this. Exercise is wonderful. Remember that lady that had the panic attack? I said, let's go for a walk. Let's go outside. Let's have a look at the beauty of nature. And in everything, give thanks.
But there are no herbs that could replace these drugs or do the similar things. Somebody has mentioned, for example, we had it the other day, marlot, wormwood.
Wormwood's a specific for worms. It's an incredibly bitter herb, and it can kill worms in the gastrointestinal tract. Whereas I look at your mild tranquilizers, your mild sedatives. So that's your chamomile, St. John's wort, skullcap, passion flower. They're your main sedative ones. As all of this is implemented, and you check, of course, when you're ascertaining the cause, you're looking at the laws of health. Unhealthful conditions changed. What else has to happen?
Wrong habits corrected.
Wrong habits corrected.
Do you not include turmeric in that list of herbs?
Turmeric is more specific for inflammation.
So pain due to inflammation?
Yes, absolutely. and habits corrected. This is a divine formula, and I can't improve on that formula. It's the best. And then assist. Yeah. Yes?
I'm having a girlfriend and she has a low thyroid function and is also allergic.
Mm-hmm. So whenever there's allergy, you immediately look at those five allergens. Check if they have exposure to chemicals. Check if there's mold in the home. And, okay, students, what would you put on the thyroid gland for underactive?
Cayenne
pepper. It's already slow. We want to boost it up. Cayenne, that's right. Would you put it on in the morning or the evening?
Morning.
Why not the evening? It'll wake them up. Yeah. And exercise, especially the high-intensity interval training, that really jolts the thyroid into activity.
Yes?
My father has had a heart operation, and after that he talked about having phlegm in his lungs. And he's had a problem with that ever since. I don't know much like how that works for him.
Well, obviously there's irritation in the lungs, and I know, having worked in operating theatre, when someone goes in on a general anaesthetic, you know, they've got tubes going down into their, down their throat, so there may be some irritation there from that. And, you know, sometimes there's a reaction to the anaesthetic. It's difficult to know, but whenever you've got a lot of mucus, that mucus is being created by the body to get rid of environmental poisons, toxins, so there could be that. Oil pulling would be very good. That'll help to draw it up and out. And then also reducing any mucus-forming foods. Probably your most mucus-forming foods are the dairies, and in the plant kingdom it would be your grains. Your grains are probably the most mucus-forming.
Yes. Is there anything other than beta blocker that the patient can take?
A beta blocker. So this is for blood pressure?
No, for heart arrhythmics.
Okay, students, what can we do for heart arrhythmia? What herb normalizes the heart function?
Hawthorn berry.
That's right. And what are two that irritate the heart function? Two things. Caffeine and wheat. So you check if they've eliminated that from their diet, and if the hawthorn didn't do it, double it. And if that didn't do it, triple it. And if that didn't do it, quadruple it. It's a very safe herb. Are they still on medication?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And there is one thing that will slow and strengthen the heartbeat, heart rate. Dr. Kellogg talked about this. Ice packs on the heart. So maybe that person could try once a day doing the on, off, on the ice, 10 seconds on, 10 seconds off. Your heart is just slightly to the left.
Yeah. Do we know why these things happen, even when the doctors say there is no reason for it?
You'd have to put your detective hat on and investigate that one. Because Proverbs 26 verse 2 says, "The curse causeless shall not come."
What kind of questions would you ask?
What sort of questions would you ask? You would ask, when did this start? Did anything traumatic happen around that time? What were you eating? What were you drinking? Were you having coffee? So you'd...
And stress.
Often yeah, stress. Stress can tip it. Stress can tip it.
And also a thyroid problem, as we know, in the case we're talking about. There is a combination of many things. Thyroid is also involved, so it can be a hormonal imbalance involved as well.
And sometimes you'd also ask if they have ever had any chemical exposure. you know, chemicals and vaccines, then you'd also ask about vaccines, ask about the teeth, any root canals, any mercury fillings. So there's lots of areas where you ask questions.
But what do you do if they have root canals?
They need to be extracted.
Mm-hmm. Because the teeth have to be extracted.
The root canal needs to be extracted, and I'll show you why. Here's your jaw, and the root is connected by a periodontal ligament to the jaw. And when they do a root canal, they basically scrape it out, take the nerve out, and they fill it a little bit, but you can't totally fill it. Then you've got this tooth with this honeycomb shape in it, or, you know, honeycomb structure, and there's no blood and there's no lymph going through it, so there's nothing to clean the tooth. It's in a very warm environment, and so microbes, they say, well, this is a nice little house to live in. And the tooth can start to rot, and that's quite common. And an abscess often builds up behind the tooth. The person often doesn't know because there's no nerve in there to feel it. And the tooth can start to rot. And what can also happen is through here you've got blood and you've got lymph flow, and that can poison the whole body. One girl did our program. She was Chinese. She was 40, very beautiful looking woman, but she had a misshaped jaw. So as I'm asking her questions, I said, have you a root canal? She said, I did. And she pointed right where the misshapen jaw was. I said, what happened? Well, she started, was getting really painful, so I just took painkillers. Mm. So the very sign that the body was giving her, do something, she silenced. Many do it. By the time she got to the dentist, that tooth, the root canal was rotten, the tooth next to it was rotten. They had to take both teeth out. 6 months later, she got bone cancer right here. And then they had to take part of her jaw out. And these are just stories guests have told me. Another lady told me that she had 4 root canals here up the top. She said after she'd had it done, it was always painful, always painful. And the dentist kept saying, it'll settle down, it'll settle down. She went to another dentist after 6 months. He did an X-ray and he said, the teeth are all breaking down. So he said, they'll have to come out. When he took them out, the top jaw collapsed because the rottenness had, you know, so that's the jawbone. And she said, you're looking at a $35,000 jaw there. They had to take bone from my pelvis. They had to build it up and then eventually put implants in there. There's a book called Root Canal Cover-Up. And it's by a doctor who was the head of the Orthodontics Association. That's the Root Canal Association. You know what they say now? Save the tooth at all costs. Sometimes the cost is life itself. There's more. Every single tooth has a reflex to different parts of the body. So you can have a tooth that has a reflex to the liver. You can have a root canal filling and get liver cancer. And we had a lady who had eye cancer. It was eating out her eye. And in her eye teeth, she had a root canal filling. Eesh. Can you see the ramifications of this?
Why do they fill it?
To save the tooth.
Yeah. Yeah. To save the tooth. Something you can brush your teeth with, something special, cream, herbs, which helps the teeth not to decay so rapidly.
Do you know what causes decay mostly is food between teeth. And if you can't brush your teeth after the meal, please rinse your mouth. Even just rinse it and floss it. Because what happens in that warm environment, who's going to come along to start eating that up? Bacteria. And then the bacteria can start to eat away at the dentine in the teeth. That's the number one cause of tooth decay. And one of the problems with sugar is it's weakening the teeth from the inside because it's leaching the calcium out, but it's also feeding the bacteria in the mouth so they eat more. Mm-hmm. So keep the teeth clean. Keep that mouth clean. Oil pull every day. Mm-hmm. When I took my children to the dentist, because we lived in a rainforest and ate the food out of the garden, and I never gave them sugar, went to the dentist. The youngest was 6, the eldest was about... No, the youngest was 4, the eldest was, I think, 15. And the dentist said, your children's teeth astonish me. There's no decay. And they didn't have fluoride. All fluoride does is harden the outer coating of the tooth. Does not strengthen the tooth. And the dentist said to me, what's incredible is one of your children had a little bit of decay and it's where the food catches, but the child's teeth is so strong the decay has not developed. Isn't that incredible?
Mm-hmm. What would you have done with that woman you talked about if you had seen her at an early stage?
Just have the root canal out immediately. It's actually a dead tooth. So what's the body going to do to dead things? Mm-hmm. Try and push it out, and that's why often an abscess happens here. One young man told me he had a root canal and it started to discolour a bit. I said, you've got to get out straight away if there's discoloration. He said when they pulled it out, and this young man's in his 30s, when they pulled it out, the smell was terrible. Now, he didn't even know because you can't feel that tooth. Root canal fillings are incredibly dangerous. Yeah?
There is a different technique for brushing your teeth that I'm using. It's called the blotting technique. And it means that you're going with your brush into the pockets on every tooth, into the pockets to draw out the food that is collected there in the pocket. And for that you use a special toothbrush. But it's a technique that was invented by a dentist. His name was Phillips, and the toothbrush came with him as well. And it's called the blotting technique. So it's a recommendation to have a look at it on YouTube. And I can send a video about that. But the amazing thing about this is that the company that produces and have a patent for producing these toothbrushes has been taken out of business now. So somebody bought it up and closed the business.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You can show it for us later.
Yeah, definitely.
Toothbrush,
yeah.
If we can't get them.
The oil
now
filling.
You cannot get it any longer.
Have you talked about it already?
Yeah, the oil pulling is great to strengthen the gums, strengthen the teeth.